Oh, snap.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining the Raw Dog Food Truth. I am your host, Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company. We're friends. Oh my gosh. My friends, don't let friends feed kibble ever. No, we do not. And we've got the wonderful holistic cancer prevention, cancer treatment vet, Dr. Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K. Hello, Dr. Jasek. How are you on this great, glorious day?
Oh, fabulous. I love fall in Colorado. It's cooling off and the skies are clear and it's a good day.
You know what? The trees are already turning. It's September 27th. We're doing this podcast September 27th. And then it goes out on Sunday night. You guys, new podcasts come out on Sunday night. So be watching for those always. But right now, the trees are already turning. Have you been driving up in the mountains? We love it up here. I mean, it's just crazy. The aspens are already yellow.
Yep. They're turning. And it seems like the ones in town are turning now too, which seems a little surprising because usually it's higher elevation first and then it works its way down. Like our neighborhood, people have like maple trees and stuff like that. It looks like those are starting to turn too. So I think, but it's been a dry fall. So maybe the trees down here are thirsty and they're just deciding to be done early, get rid of their leaves.
Yes. Well, I tell you who else is thirsty, and that is our listeners. They are thirsty for what you have to say. And before we get started, I just want to say hello to all of our new Texas listeners. We have a lot of people in the Texas area who are now listening to the Raw Dog Food Truth. So we want to say hello to you and welcome. Know that you can always, always, always get in touch with Dr. Judy Jasek for a phone consult. Phone consult, okay? Because she is a raw feeding vet. She is a gut specialist. And I know there's a lot of vets out there that just don't get it. And we get it that they don't get it because we hear it all the time. We want you to understand, as we have said on many, 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 many podcasts, come on, people, what's in raw food that's going to make your dog sick? Nothing. Don't they eat poop? I mean, how much, you know, I want to ask this question. How much bacteria is in poop, Dr. Jasek? In fecal matter?
Like a lot, like an unimaginable amount compared to what's in raw food. And I do. I think that's hilarious that raw food gets incriminated. Oh, there's all this, you know, bacteria in the food and you can't, you know, if somebody in your house is sick, don't bring raw food in because it's going to make them sicker. But then you got a dog that's like, they lick their butts. I mean, come on. But that doesn't enter into the, I mean, there's plenty of bacteria there in the environment and those dogs are not making people sick. I mean, there's all these studies about the benefits of having pets and all that, but they have a lot of bacteria naturally on their body. You know, it's not the raw food. The raw food is not, it's just not a risk factor.
I know. And I hear some really silly things coming from the veterinary world. I heard a vet say to one of our pet parents when they were telling them what they were feeding, and the vets, you know, we're feeding raw. And the vet said, why would you feed raw? Would you eat raw food? And I said, why didn't you say to your vet, well, do you lick your butt? I mean, it just... I mean, maybe you would if you could, but here's the thing. I mean, we're not the same. Okay, these are animals and we are humans. I know that those lines get blurred and we think these are our little babies and they are our babies, but they are not our human babies. Okay.
Right.
So So I don't even get that statement. We wouldn't eat raw food, so why do you feed your dog raw food? And I said, well, we don't lick our butts, but I don't know why my dog licked his butt. I can't make her stop. This is something that she likes to do.
Right. Right. Why do they pee on everything when you go out for a walk and they every 20 feet they gotta stop and pee and sniff and pee and sniff and pee? Like, why do you guys do this? Obviously it's something you enjoy, but I don't get it. Because yeah, right, we're not dogs. And for people, you know, like, well, would you eat a like dry breakfast cereal? And that's it ever? Like, that's really what kibble's like. You know, you take a even if it's organic, in a dry cereal with vitamins and minerals sprayed on, and that's all you eat ever for the rest of your life. I mean, would you feel good eating that? I mean, that's what kibble's like, really. It's like taking a vitamin and mineral supplement. There's no nutritional value or very little, and you're taking a vitamin and mineral supplement and wondering why our pets keep getting sicker. It's like, it's a no-brainer to me that we have to feed fresh, whole food, just like we need to eat fresh, whole food. And there are people that eat raw food, maybe not a lot of raw meat, but a lot of people that are into eating, you know, raw diets. But the point is, it should be a whole food diet. And that's the whole point for our pets. And so whenever something goes wrong, for whatever reason, the raw always gets blamed, and it's always unfounded. And we've talked about this. Every time I dig into these cases, there's always multiple other reasons. Always. I mean, if you have to find a case where there's not multiple other potential reasons for the pet being sick besides the raw. Just the raw tends to get incriminated for whatever reason.
Oh, it does. It does. So I'm going to ask you, I want to talk about today a couple of questions that have come in. And for our listeners, please feel free to email me a question at Dee Dee at rawdogfoodandco. That's Dee Dee at rawdogfoodandco.com. You want us to answer your question here on the podcast? We'll be more than glad to do so. Some of the questions that have come in. So here is one great one. I love this question. So this particular pet parent, her name is Jessica, and she said, I just got done catching up on your podcast while doing a meal prep for my pup, and I had a question hoping you could run by Dr. Jasek. And she says, we chose to get our boy a vasectomy. Now she's talking about her dog. Okay. He's only.
Good, you have to make that clarification. Which yes. Boy in the household got the vasectomy.
Right, because he's only 14 months old after all. And and she was wondering if there was a natural way or even a need to support his prostate and testicular health right now instead of waiting for that enlarged prostate or other problems down the road.
That's a great question, because I'll tell you, in male dogs, you know, when I first started practicing, you heard all the stuff, they're, oh, you leave them intact, they're going to get enlarged prostate, they're going to get prostate disease. And, you know, I've been practicing long enough, and that I can say in my patients, I just never saw it happening. It was really actually quite rare that you'd see enlarged prostates. And so I have probably in the last maybe 15 or so years been recommending more and more to people, you know, neutering a male dog is more of a behavioral decision. It's not a medical decision. I don't really think there's much medical risk in leaving them intact. And that includes the enlarged prostate. You know, along with that, I think the most important thing, as always, is to support them nutritionally with whole food and ideally raw nutrition. But I don't see it happening. And I'm seeing more and more of my clients leaving their dogs intact. And this is the same effect with or without the vasectomy, because you still have the hormones. The vasectomy just prevents them from, you know, impregnating a female. But the effects on the body are the same. So I think feeding the raw diet, a good mix of organ meats, which has all the vitamins and minerals necessary to, you know, support the whole hormonal and endocrine system, the tripe to help, you know, with the healthy gut. I don't think that you have to do anything special really to support the prostate beyond just good basic nutrition and good healthy living. And the neutering decision, like I said, in my mind, that comes down to behavior. If male dogs are well trained, they behave themselves, they're not overly aggressive, they're not marking everything. You know, sometimes you take them, you know, take a male dog into somebody's house and they'll smell another dog and start peeing on furniture, and that's not very acceptable. But if they can be trained such that they have good social manners, then I don't really feel like there's a medical risk to leaving them intact.
Yeah. Where did that start, you think, that everybody just thinks, okay, I have a dog, I need to go get them neutered or spayed? I get that from a, we don't want to impregnate and bring in more dogs into the world. We should be talking about people too. Some people should not be bringing more babies into the world, but okay. Snap out of it, Dee.
No kidding, but different topic. Yeah.
Different podcast. Okay. So, where did all that start? Was this just, where did the lines sort of get crossed? Because I think sometimes, you know, I see it both ways. We have people who really frown. You see a dog walking down the street and you see his, you know, he has his stuff. He has his junk still in the trunk. And people frown on that. But from a veterinarian's perspective, a holistic vet, what are your thoughts about neutering or not neutering? Would you or wouldn't you?
Well, I think a lot of that probably came from population control. And, you know, it's pushed by the rescue organizations and the shelters. And I get it. They see the volume of unwanted pets. They see pets every day have to be euthanized because there's just so many of them. So I get the population control. And, you know, let's face it, there's irresponsible humans out there that will not keep their intact dogs under control. I mean, if you have an intact male, you need to make sure that they're not getting the opportunity to just indiscriminately breed, because, you know, that's not appropriate. We do have a lot of unwanted pets. Pets are euthanized every single day because there's just more pets than we have homes for. So from a health perspective, I think there's probably more advantages actually to leaving them intact, because you're leaving that whole hormonal system intact. But people, you know, need to be responsible. And I think from the perspective of the shelters, the rescue organizations, they probably are exposed to the irresponsible population, you know, more so. I mean, they're slanted that way. So they're like, okay, we can't trust the people, therefore we need to neuter the pets. So I understand that perspective, but there's not really a medical need for it. In females, you know, you do have some potential risks for leaving. If you leave the uterus in, you know, you can get pyometra, which is an infection in the uterus and can be very serious. I mean, they can go into, you know, septic shock and die from a pyometra. And then if it's diagnosed, they have to have an emergency spay and they're very sick. So the surgery is very risky. So that is a potential risk. There's also statistically a little more risk for mammary tumors. However, I can't say that I have seen, I don't see a lot of intact females. Most people will get their females spayed because they don't want to deal with them going in and out of heat. So I question in my mind. So, you know, we've seen these potential medical risks, the pyometra, the mammary tumors. But that all of those statistics are coming from kibble-fed dogs. They're not coming from raw-fed, minimally vaccinated, holistically supported individuals. So there's a big part of me that says, well, if we're really supporting these females nutritionally, keeping their hormonal system healthy, you know, with good nutrition and a clean lifestyle, are these risks going to be as big of an issue? And I really don't have an answer to that because I just haven't seen as many intact females as I have males, because most people, you know, get their dogs spayed. But I think, you know, the body parts are natural, you know, if they're supported properly, then I think there's a good chance they may not need to be spayed. Just, you know, again, people need to be responsible. If we have more and more intact pets out there, you can't let them run free at the dog park, you know? So that's another thing. If you want to take your dog out somewhere off leash and not worry about it, then you maybe do need to get them spayed and neutered. So I think it's more of a lifestyle, convenience, and temperament decision rather than a medical decision.
Got it. Now, there is a spay called ovary-sparing spay, OSS. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that? And do you think that there's a benefit to the sparing spay versus just the normal take it all out of the female?
Yeah, I think there probably is hormonally. Because you're allowing the body to continue to produce those hormones. She's still going to act like she's in heat, but could potentially, because she acts like she's in heat and hormonally, her body may think it's in heat, may still attract males, but she's not going to be able to get pregnant, obviously, because the uterus is gone. But they're leaving the hormones intact. So I think probably for the health of the body, that would probably be a good option. I mean, again, it's not something I've seen enough of where I can say, you know, I don't have the volume of patients that I've seen have that or gotten feedback from clients in the real world. So this is somewhat theoretical, but from the perspective of keeping the hormones and the whole endocrine system intact, you know, would we see less hypothyroidism, less adrenal issues, you know, less of these other endocrine issues that we see so much of if we left the whole system intact? So theoretically, I would say, yeah, I would think that's probably true. I mean, if you look at humans, when women get hysterectomies, what they go through hell sometimes because of those hormonal changes. You know, they have to be on synthetic hormones and, you know, that's hard on the body. And we just kind of expect our pets to, you know, accept that. And maybe it doesn't have the same impact on our pets, but it makes sense to me that if we left that system, the more intact we can leave that system, that we may have fewer of the other endocrine problems.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I would have to agree with you there. All right. So let's talk about another question that came in. And this is one that you and I have talked about a little bit before. This is, okay, if you're on the raw diet, and I think most people that are listening to us are probably feeding a raw diet, maybe looking at a raw diet, and you have a blend, Dr. Jacek, let's say a beef blend, or I think this happened to be a pork blend. And pork bones are very soft. They're way softer than beef bones. But we had someone who said, you know, my dog was eating a pork blend and there was blood. So I think it was the bone, blood and stools. So I think it's the bone. The bones, you know, is tearing her up. This is a question that people really struggle with in their minds, that they think that these bones in the raw diet, in a blend, mind you, that goes through a grinder, okay, is going to cause bleeding in the other end, in the booty. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I think it's, I would say almost impossible that the bone is going to be causing bleeding. And I'm assuming they're seeing like fresh blood, like a colitis or, you know, another thing that can happen are things like abscessed anal glands or other issues. Again, there's lots of reasons why they can see blood, but ground up bone, you know, even in, you know, some blends I've seen where, you know, you can actually see little like pieces of bone. Those are going to pass through, and raw bones are pliable. You know, when you feed cooked bones, you know, like I see people eat a steak and then they give their dogs those cooked T-bones or something, or rib bones, and then they're puking them up 2 hours later because those cooked bones are brittle and they are very irritating, and those can cause problems, or cooked chicken bones. But raw bones are, they're soft, they're pliable, and especially when they are ground into, you know, these small pieces, that's, a lot of that is going to be digested. I mean, what you're going to see with the bone, and even with some of the blends that have the higher bone, if anything, they get like a, they'll get a little firmer stool, you know, where the stool can look a little like drier and a little chalkier, but it isn't going to cause bleeding. I could not get on board with that at all. And I mean, tearing them up, I mean, for if you're seeing fresh blood, like bright red blood, it has to be coming from the colon, because bleeding higher up, the blood literally gets digested. So it gets darker and darker and darker. So if you have darker red blood, or even the stool start to look like real black, that could be bleeding even higher up in the digestive tract. So by the time all these little bone pieces get back there to the colon, they're going to be like they've been subjected to the digestive process. So they're going to be even softer. And if a bone was going to cause a problem, it's going to cause it up higher in the stomach or in the small intestine. It isn't going to make it, if a dog ingests a bone that was actually capable of damaging the digestive tract, it wouldn't wait till it got all the way to the back end to cause the problem. We'd be seeing, like I said, vomiting or something like that way before we'd be seeing that. So that would be a case where I'd say, yeah, we got to be looking at what else are they feeding? You know, what are they eating for treats? I see so many just horrible, horrible treats. I'm amazed at how, you know, when I question people, you know, they might be feeding raw or they're feeding a pretty good diet. And then I start digging into what they're feeding treat-wise. And there's just so much garbage in treats out there that are supposed to be natural and all this stuff. Or, you know, are they getting any amount of people food or medications? You know, hello, pharmaceuticals, heartworm prevention, flea and tick preventatives, vaccinations, all of those things are potentially damaging to the body. So we need to look at the whole picture. But is a raw blend going to be causing blood in the stool? No. Parasites, I guess, would be another thing to look at there too. Do a fecal, make sure there's no parasites. But is the raw blend causing that? No. I mean, I rarely speak in absolutes, but I would say 99.999% chance that it's not the raw.
When a pet parent has it in their mind that it's bone, what do? They want to feed boneless. And I say that is simply something that we do not recommend. We do not recommend a boneless food. You know, there's reasons why you want bone in the diet. There's minerals in there. Bone is a phosphorus binder. There's a lot of reasons. And I don't know how you're going to get there are some boneless ones. I guess you can add some of the things to get a firmer poop. But number one, that's just not using all the animal. So before you think that bone is not good in the diet, let's take a look at what Dr. Judy was just talking about. what else is going on. And the other thing, Dr. Jasek, is this, is that it was just one day. It was just one day that there was blood. Mm-hmm. You know, so
yeah.
Again, I think you guys have really got to think about your fear level as you come into the raw diet. I know that you want the best for your pet, but you really got to test your own beliefs. And what do you really believe about the bacteria level? What do you really believe about pet health? And I always say, look, you're going to see what you believe.
Totally. And that's you know, by and large, you know, I know in the veterinary profession, the message out there is that raw is dangerous and, you know, raw is bad. And, you know, it's some, you know, fad diet that the profession's hoping is going to, you know, someday go away or something. But that is the message. And, you know, that's one of the things I'm trying to do is to change that way of thinking, because I just, you know, I believe that raw is absolutely the best way and the healthiest way to feed pets. And I agree with your comment on the bone. People get so worried about calcium and phosphorus balance and all that. Well, bone has the perfect mineral balance. It's exactly what your dog needs. The bone is like Mother Nature's perfect mineral supplement. Like, just do that. That's what Mother Nature intended. Another thing too, that, you know, when people come back with these claims, another question I would ask is like, okay, are you observing your dog 100% of the time, 24/7? Because if you're not, I can guarantee you, your dog is eating things that you're not aware of, because that's what dogs do. They're scavengers. They're out. I see my dogs, they go out in my garden and they're grazing, and I don't know why they go out there and eat the plants, but sometimes they enjoy doing that. And maybe they'll have a little loose stool or something like that. But your dog, I can guarantee you, is eating things that you're not aware of, because that's what dogs do. They eat poop. They eat sticks. They eat God knows what. They find a dead bird in your backyard and they eat that. I mean, this is what dogs do. And unless you're observing your dog around the clock, I can absolutely guarantee you, your dog is eating things that you're not aware of. And it's the raw food, in my opinion, is so safe and so healthy that it just doesn't make sense to be automatically incriminating that when there's multiple other variables that your dog is exposed to that could be causing the issue or the symptom that you're seeing.
This I want to discuss something called a confinement smell in food. Manufacturers, they vacuum seal, okay, because of the fear in the market, right? Because of this pressure from the FDA, because of this, you know, oh my gosh, there's so much bacteria. So gases are developing all the time in food, but if it's not vacuum sealed, they can get out. Now, if they get trapped inside of there and it's frozen, you take it home, you thaw it out, you open it up, it smells like a big fart. I'm just going to say it. That's what it smells like. All right. Now, pet parents are like, oh my gosh, this is spoiled. Well, number one, it's not spoiled, but I get it. So Dr. Jasek, I want to ask you about this. This is another thing that came in, and we had a pet parent who said, well, I've been feeding turkey and chicken before, these poultry products, but this one had a funky smell and my dog started itching. So this caused my dog a yeast problem. I can't make that leap. How does that cause yeast in a dog?
Yeah, I can't make that leap either. Because yeast, the way I see yeast, if you have like yeast growing on, you know, skin of a dog or ears of a dog, that's always secondary to inflammation. So yeast is in the environment. It's everywhere. It's opportunistic. So if you have healthy skin and a healthy immune system, the body is going to keep that in check. It's when you have inflammation, which compromises the immunity in the skin, and then that yeast will take hold and start to grow, or you get a dog that starts licking at their foot, so the foot's always moist, then the yeast is going to start to grow. So in order to have yeast, you have to have some other underlying inflammatory process. And this, I would go back to all the things we talked about before. What else is that dog getting into? You know, is the dog walking through lawns that have been sprayed with chemicals that are, could potentially inflame that skin? There's so many other factors that could be going on, but you have to have an underlying inflammatory process already going on to start the yeast growing. So when I hear that scenario, I would think the two happened at the same time, but are unrelated.
Right. And I always do ask, tell me what treats you are feeding, what supplements you are putting in the dog's body. You know, there's, as we know, there's always an underlying story. I didn't get an answer back. The answer I got was, I'm feeding the same treats they have always gotten. The only thing changed was this food.
You know, and I hear that all the time too. And then I question people more and more. Like, well, yeah, okay, there was that trip to the bank drive-through where they got the little milk bone, but it was just a small one. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a lot to set off an inflammatory process in some individuals. One of these little artificially dyed with little milk bone biscuits with God knows what in them would be enough to set off, you know, inflammation in the body, probably would not, would be temporary, but is enough to set it off. Or like we said before, what are your dogs eating? I have one of my little dogs is such a scavenger, and he's, you know, he's got his nose down there on the ground all the time, and he eats stuff sometimes on walks before I even see it. I mean, and he'll be, I mean, you know, I walk my dogs where kids walk back and forth to school. There's Cheetos and left half of sandwiches and all this stuff that he'll eat sometimes before I can stop him. Like he can smell it. And so he's searching for it. Then all of a sudden he's eating something. And I didn't see it. So those things I think happen. And I think people just don't realize that those little incidences could set off an inflammatory process in the body. So is confinement smell going to be causing yeast? No. I would say that's impossible. I would say that's, you know, two things that happened at the same time, but no cause and effect.
People in general really need a process that says A plus B equals C. We have to know why this thing happened. And like you said, it's sometimes it's just this occurred at the same time this occurred, and they, to our minds, appear to be one and the same, and they're not. So I don't know how to help you anymore. That's why we do these podcasts, because during these podcasts, I can talk with Dr. Jasek, and I think that you guys believe Dr. Jasek, right? I mean, she is a veterinarian who has dealt with dogs, who has a proven record. How long have you been practicing veterinary medicine?
Well, I graduated vet school in 1988, so over 30 years.
And how many dogs do you think that you have seen in 30 years?
Oh, gosh, I wouldn't know. Thousands. It has to be thousands.
It has to be.
Maybe a million. It feels like a lot. It has to be thousands. Probably tens of, probably tens of thousands. So, yeah, I feel like I've got a pretty good knowledge base based on experience. Do I have published research studies? No, but I'll also tell you that I would go on a limb and say probably the majority of research studies that you will find are slanted. They have an agenda. They are funded by big corporations, and not all of them, but a lot of them are funded with They have a conclusion that they want to find. They are funded with the premise that say, okay, we want to prove that this food helps kidney disease or this drug helps with this symptom. do that research study and we'll give you this money. And this, that's the real world. And that's what happens. So when people say, well, is there research? Like, I think a lot of research out there these days is bogus. There's some good research, but before you just start blindly believing research studies, you need to know who's behind them, who funded them, where did the money, follow the money, find out where did that come from? Because it's very, very, very expensive to do research. And so smaller companies like raw dog food companies didn't have the money, the resources to do that and stay afloat. So there's not the, you know, research studies on raw food because they're just so expensive to do. Well, who has the money to do research? These big mega corporations like Mars and Colgate Palmolive, these are the companies that own the kibble side of the pet food industry. They have the money to do any kind of research they want. And they can, you know, they can go to university and say, look, we want a research study that proves XYZ about this food. And create that research study, and guess what? We'll give you X amount of money. And oh yeah, we'll throw in a little extra for your university. And that's the real world. And I might sound a little conspiracy theorist, but that is what happens out in the real world. So you need to be really, really careful and question, where is your information coming from? Where is your veterinarian getting the information that they're getting? Just ask questions. Just you have to take some accountability. Don't believe blindly. And another thing, just back to this whole, you know, food topic and what's causing what, I would challenge a pet parent, dog comes up with new symptoms, you sit down and do a journal for 48 hours, every single thing that you're giving your pet, because I think that in some cases, pet parents might be sneaking little things in that they don't want to fess up to. And I've seen this. Or the kids are giving the dog something that maybe the parents aren't aware of. Like, really be honest with what's going on in the household. And I think we would find other things going on. It's very convenient to blame the raw food, which is already incriminated in the profession, rather than taking a good, honest look at, okay, what's been going on in our routine at home?
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.